A Contra Podcast Conversations. For the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are tackling a really big question, maybe the biggest. What actually makes life feel worth living?
Yeah, it's fundamental.
We're diving deep into Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi's, well, legendary book, Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience.
It's such a key work, and, you know, it feels more relevant than ever today because it gets right at this huge modern paradox.
Which is?
Well, think about it. Globally, we've got more material comfort, more stuff, more tech, more potential free time than like ever before in history, right?
Yeah, it seemed like we should be happier.
Exactly. But the stats show reported happiness levels are flat or even dropping in some places, despite all the comfort.
It's weird, isn't it? We think, oh, make life easier, less effort, more comfort, that equals happiness. But the data doesn't quite back that up.
And that's precisely Csikszentmihalyi's point. He argues we're kind of looking in the wrong direction altogether. We chase passive things, like just relaxing, or we look for external validation, getting stuff.
Right.
But the book argues really strongly that genuine fulfillment, it isn't found out there. It's not in possessions or just, you know, binge watching something. It's about the quality of your internal experience, what's happening in your head moment to moment.
Okay, so our mission today is to unpack the science behind that inner quality, the state he famously called flow. What is it? How do we get there? That feeling of being completely absorbed, working at your best.
And crucially, how can you, listening, start actually cultivating it in your own life? It's not just theory.
Definitely. But first, let's talk about the man himself.
Sure.
Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi lived 1934 to 2021, Hungarian-American psychologist.
And a key figure, really a co-founder of what we now call positive psychology.
And his backstory is, well, it's pretty intense. And it really shapes his work, doesn't it? His interest in finding meaning wasn't just academic curiosity.
Not at all. It was forged in extremity. He was a Holocaust survivor. He saw firsthand, during unimaginable hardship, how some people managed to find resilience, even purpose, even moments of actual joy.
Well, everything externally was just catastrophic.
Right. And that experience, understandably, it fueled his whole life's work. Trying to scientifically understand how. What are the mechanisms that allow for a meaningful life, even when things are terrible?
And he wasn't satisfied with just philosophical ideas about happiness. He wanted data. He brought real scientific rigor to it. Tell us about the method he developed, because it was pretty groundbreaking.
It really was. It's called the Experience Sampling Method, or ESM. Totally revolutionary for its time. See, instead of asking people, like, weeks later, hey, how happy were you last month, which relies on memory, and memory is, well, faulty.
Yeah, notoriously unreliable.
He gave thousands of people these little pagers. Remember pagers? When the pager beeped, randomly throughout the day, they had to stop and immediately write down what they were doing right then and exactly how they were feeling. What was their mood, their engagement level, right in that moment.
Ah, so it's real-time data. That takes the study of happiness out of pure philosophy and makes it something you can actually measure scientifically moment by moment.
Precisely. And it let him map out what optimal experience actually feels like as it's happening across all sorts of people. Elite athletes, surgeons, artists, but also, you know, factory workers, shepherds.
Yeah.
Really diverse groups.
Okay, so that gives us the foundation. Let's get into the book's core argument then. If happiness isn't passive, if it's not about just getting stuff or relaxing, then it must be something we actively create.
That's the core idea. And he starts by identifying the main obstacle we face. He calls it psychic entropy.
Entropy, like in physics, the tendency towards disorder.
Exactly like that, but applied to the mind. Left to its own devices, our consciousness naturally drifts towards chaos. We get stuck in loops, worries, anxieties, boredom, self-criticism. Just mental noise.
Mm-hmm.
And that state, that psychic entropy, it burns a ton of mental energy.
Okay, so our minds naturally tend towards messiness if we don't direct them. Psychic entropy. So what's the opposite? What's the fix?
The fix, the antidote is flow. He defines it as psychic negentropy, basically, the opposite of entropy. It's the active, deliberate process of focusing our limited attention.
Wow.
By directing it towards structured, goal-directed activities. It's about actively imposing order and harmony on that internal chaos.
So the book isn't really offering external solutions like buy this or go there. It's giving us a framework for mastering our inner world.
Exactly. It's about shifting focus, transforming the process of doing things, even everyday things, so the doing itself becomes the reward.
Right. We stop chasing happiness as some kind of destination we arrive at.
Mm. Yeah, and start treating it more like a skill, something you practice, you cultivate within the actual flow of your activities.
Okay, that's a big shift. And to really grasp flow, he makes a crucial distinction first, one we often miss. The difference between pleasure and enjoyment. We kind of use them interchangeably, right?
We do, but he says they're fundamentally different. Pleasure is basically passive. It satisfies biological needs, eating when you're hungry, resting when you're tired, warmth when you're cold.
It restores balance. Brings you back to zero.
Precisely. It restores equilibrium, makes you comfortable again. It's necessary, like basic maintenance for the body and mind. But, and this is key, it doesn't lead to growth. It doesn't make you a more complex or skilled person.
Okay, so that's pleasure. What about enjoyment then?
Enjoyment is active. It requires effort. It demands concentration, focus. Enjoyment doesn't happen when you're just passively consuming something.
It happens when you're doing something.
Yes, when you're overcoming a challenge, stretching your skills, learning something new, accomplishing something that took effort, that's enjoyment.
And flow is like the peak form of enjoyment.
Exactly. Flow is the ultimate enjoyment because it inherently involves pushing yourself, expanding your abilities. You actually grow. You become more complex, more capable every time you genuinely hit that flow state.
So how do we get into that state? What's the mechanism? This brings us to his famous flow channel model, right?
Yes. The model itself looks simple, but it's powerful. It all comes down to the dynamic balance between two key things. The level of challenge the activity presents.
Okay.
And your personal level of skill related to that activity.
Challenge and skill. Okay, give me an example. Like playing tennis.
Perfect. Okay, so imagine you're a beginner. Your skills are low. If you step onto the court with, say, Serena Williams, the challenge is astronomically higher than your skill. What happens?
Total panic. Anxiety.
Right.
Frustration.
Yeah.
You just want to run away.
Right. Anxiety. The challenge crushes your skill level. Now flip it. Imagine you're a seasoned pro, high skill level, and you play against someone who's never held a racket before.
Utter boredom. It's too easy. My mind would wander. I wouldn't be engaged at all.
Exactly. Boredom or apathy. Your skill vastly outweighs the challenge. Flow. Flow lives in that specific channel, that sweet spot, where the challenge and your skill are pretty much perfectly matched.
And importantly, they're both high, right? It's not just easy matching easy.
Critically important. Both are high. You're being constantly stretched, pushed right to the edge of your abilities, but you're never overwhelmed. You feel competent, but also challenged. That's the zone.
This is where it gets really practical. Csikszentmihalyi didn't just define the channel. He identified, through all that ESM data, 8 specific characteristics that consistently show up when someone is in flow, regardless of the activity.
Yeah, these are like the universal markers, the signs that tell you you've achieved that order in consciousness. The first one's maybe the most obvious, complete concentration on what you're doing.
Tunnel vision, almost. Everything else just disappears.
Totally. Distractions vanish.
Yeah.
Second and third are about structure. You need clear goals. You know exactly what needs to be done moment by moment.
Okay.
And you get immediate feedback. You know instantly whether what you just did worked or not. Are you getting closer to the goal?
It keeps you locked in, adjusting as you go.
Right. Then, fourth is that core balance between challenge and skill we just talked about. Fifth is fascinating. The merging of action and awareness.
What does that feel like?
It feels spontaneous, automatic. Like you're not consciously deciding every single move. The action just flows out of you. It feels effortless, even though you might be working incredibly hard.
Like the activity is doing itself through you, almost.
That's a great way to put it. Then, number six, and this is a big one, the loss of self-consciousness. Your ego just dissolves.
Just stop worrying about what others think or how you look.
Completely. All your mental energy is focused outward on the task, not inward on yourself. There's no room left for self-critique or social anxiety.
Wow. Okay, what's seven?
The transformation of time. This is one people really recognize. Either time seems to fly by, you look up, and hours have passed in what felt like minutes.
Happens all the time when I'm really into writing something.
Or in very high stakes, fast-paced situations, think extreme sports or maybe surgery time can feel like it slows down, allowing for incredible precision and focus.
Wild. Okay, and the last one, number eight.
Number eight is the autotelic nature of the activity. This is crucial.
Autotelic, meaning?
It literally means self-goal. auto, self, and telos goal. The activity is its own reward. It's intrinsically motivating. You're doing it purely for the sake of doing it because the experience itself is so engaging and fulfilling.
Not for some external payoff like money or fame or praise.
Exactly. Those things might happen, but they're not the reason you're doing it. The reward is the experience of flow itself. That's autotelic.
That really challenges how society often pushes us to think, doesn't it? Always focused on the external reward.
Absolutely. And speaking of surprising findings, using that ESFP, it wasn't during their free time, which is what you might expect.
Right. I remember reading that. It was often at work, wasn't it? Even if they said they'd rather be doing something else.
Startling, right. But it makes sense when you look at the conditions. Work, even boring work sometimes, often has the built-in structure needed for flow. Clear goals, finish this report, assemble this part, rules to follow, and often some form of feedback. Did the machine run smoothly? Did the boss approve the draft?
Whereas our leisure time, we often default to passive stuff.
Yeah.
Watching TV, scrolling social media. The challenge level is basically zero.
Precisely. We seek pleasure, maybe, but not necessarily enjoyment or flow. And then boredom kicks in, psychic entropy returns.
Mm. And he even found this applies in extreme situations. Chapter 9, cheating chaos.
Yeah, it's incredibly powerful. He documented how people facing severe adversity, serious illness, imprisonment, concentration camps could use flow principles to maintain their sanity and find meaning.
How? By focusing internally.
By transforming the external threat, which they couldn't control, into an internal manageable challenge they could control. Focusing intensely on small, achievable goals, mastering their thoughts, finding intricate tasks to occupy their minds. Basically building an inner world of order when the outer world was chaos.
Can you give that example of the factory worker again, how they found flow in something repetitive?
Sure. There was this one worker on an assembly line doing the same task over and over. Sounds like peak boredom, right?
Yeah, the definition of it.
But he didn't change the job. He changed his approach to it. He turned it into a private game. He set himself challenges. How fast can I perfectly assemble this component? Can I beat my record from yesterday? Can I do it with absolute economy of motion?
Ah, so he introduced clear goals, immediate feedback. Did I do it faster? Perfectly. And constantly tweaks the challenge level to match his growing skill.
Exactly. He was creating the conditions for flow within a seemingly monotonous task. He generated the enjoyment internally. It shows the power isn't in the activity itself always, but in how you engage with it.
That really highlights some of the big overarching themes of the book. The first one feels like it reframes everything. Attention is the ultimate resource.
Totally. He argues that your attention, where you choose to place it, how you control it, is far more valuable than time or money. Why? Because the entire quality of your life experience is determined by how you organize your consciousness.
If your attention is scattered or constantly hijacked, life feels chaotic and unsatisfying.
Right. If it's focused and directed, life feels ordered and meaningful. Simple, but profound.
Okay, theme two, the importance of the autotelic experience, doing things for their own sake.
Yeah, this is a direct challenge to our culture's obsession with extrinsic rewards, money, status, grades, whatever. Yeah. Csikszentmihalyi says true, deep fulfillment comes from activities that are intrinsically rewarding. The joy is in the doing, not just the getting.
It shifts the focus from the outcome to the process.
And theme three, which is incredibly empowering, is what you might call the democracy of flow.
Meaning it's available to everyone.
Pretty much. Regardless of your job, your income, your social class, your background, flow doesn't require expensive equipment or special circumstances. It just requires the disciplined investment of your own attention and effort. It's accessible.
I think my favorite theme, maybe because it feels so freeing, is the paradox of control.
Ah, yes, that counterintuitive idea. Explain it.
It's the realization that you feel most in control. Not when you're desperately trying to manipulate everything around you.
Which is exhausting and often futile.
Right. But when you let go of controlling the external outcome and instead focus entirely on controlling your internal state, your attention, your actions, your responses.
Yes. You surrender outcome control, but gain complete process control. And paradoxically, that's where true mastery and a sense of agency come from. You master yourself, not the world.
It's liberating. And the book is just packed with lines that crystallize these ideas. Let's share a couple of the really memorable ones. The first one nails the active versus passive thing.
Right, he says. The best moments in our lives are not the passive, receptive, relaxing times, although those have their place.
Sure.
The best moments usually occur if a person's body or mind is stretched to its limits in a voluntary effort to accomplish something difficult and worthwhile.
Bam. Effort is required for optimal experience. It puts pure relaxation in perspective.
Then, linking back to attention as the key, control of consciousness determines the quality of life.
So simple, so direct. Happiness is an inside job, a skill of managing your focus.
It's the foundation, and maybe the most poetic definition of the state itself. Flow is being completely involved in an activity for its own sake. The ego falls away. Time flies. Every action follows inevitably, like playing jazz.
Oh, I love that jazz metaphor. Structure and rules, but also improvisation and spontaneity within them.
Exactly. Effortless mastery. That's the feeling.
Okay, so we get the theory, we get the feeling. How do we actually do this more often? Let's talk practical application, starting with work. You mentioned job crafting. How does that work?
Job crafting is crucial, especially if your job feels routine or lacks obvious flow triggers. You don't necessarily need to change jobs. You change how you do the job. You actively look for ways to introduce the elements of flow.
Like the factory worker example.
Exactly. Set personal micro goals. If you answer emails, maybe aim for, okay, this hour, I'll answer 15 emails with perfect clarity and zero typos, or I'll try to respond 10% faster than yesterday. You're adding challenge.
And creating your own feedback loop. Did I hit the goal? Was it perfect?
Right. If the job doesn't give you feedback, create it yourself. Track your performance. Make it a game. This injects challenge and engagement into tasks that might otherwise feel draining.
And this applies outside work too, right? Even to chores.
Absolutely. Don't just clean the kitchen. Frame it as a challenge. Can I make this entire kitchen spotless in exactly 25 minutes using the most efficient sequence of actions? Or I'm going to cook this meal, focusing only on the process, the chopping, the smells, the timing, like a meditation.
Turning the mundane into a microflow opportunity. Focus completely, set a goal, get feedback.
We can also apply this to relationships. He talks about social flow.
Okay, flow with other people. How?
Instead of just passively being together, like, you know, sitting on the couch, both scrolling on your phones.
Guilty.
Yeah, me too sometimes. Social flow means seeking shared activities that require active engagement from everyone.
Like what?
Like having a conversation where you practice deep, active listening, really trying to understand the other person's perspective, setting mutual goals for something, like planning a trip together or learning a skill together, engaging in family rituals that have clear roles and expected actions, playing a team sport or a complex board game.
So it's about creating shared goals and feedback loops within the interaction itself, making sure everyone is actively participating and engaged.
Exactly. It requires being fully present with each other. And finally, thinking long term, these principles are incredibly powerful for building resilience.
Which connects right back to Csikszentmihalyi's own life experience.
Absolutely. When crisis hits, a job loss, an illness, a major setback, the natural tendency is towards psychic entropy. Panic, worry, feeling overwhelmed. Flow principles offer an alternative.
Yeah.
You consciously reframe the external chaos. You can't control the hurricane, maybe, but you can control your response. You identify the immediate challenge. What is the one thing I can do right now to improve the situation or just to maintain my own stability?
So you focus your limited psychic energy on the immediate solvable problem in front of you.
Precisely. You break the overwhelming threat down into manageable steps. You impose order on your own actions and attention, even when the world outside feels disordered. That concentration stabilizes the self, maintains inner structure, and stops the downward spiral. It's about controlling what you can control, your focus and your effort.
You know, what really struck me digging back into this work is just how universal and accessible this state is. The idea that someone working on an assembly line can potentially achieve the same depth of engagement and satisfaction as, I don't know, a rock climber or a renowned musician.
Yeah.
It really drives home that happiness isn't just luck or circumstance. It's genuinely a skill. A skill that can be learned and practiced.
That's the core takeaway, isn't it? And it leads to the final, really empowering message of the book, I think. Flow isn't just about isolated good moments.
It's about building something bigger.
Exactly. It offers a path for continuous growth like an upward spiral. Each time you enter flow, you stretch your skills. You become slightly more complex, more capable by intentionally seeking out these experiences, mastering challenges, and then ideally connecting these skills to some larger self-chosen purpose.
Or not just finding meaning.
You're actively creating it. You build an integrated, complex, meaningful life. That's what he called the autotelic personality, someone whose life is driven by intrinsic rewards and the ongoing joy of engagement. You literally build a self worth experiencing.
A powerful idea to end on. It's not about finding happiness, but constructing it, moment by moment, challenge by challenge.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.